Before I actually begin the Dharma talk itself, I'd like to just give a little instruction about what it is to what is a Dharma talk and how do we listen to a Dharma talk? Of course, there are many of you who have heard many Dharma talks, but for those who are a bit newer to this practice, a Dharma talk is, it's not exactly like a lecture, even though, you know, I'm sitting up here in the front of the room and I'm giving a talk like maybe a professor would, you know, at university. A Dharma talk is the way we relate to, the way we listen to a Dharma talk is a little bit different. You know, when we're listening to a lecture about a particular subject, we might be kind of thinking about, you know, oh, this relates to that, you know, something about literature or, you know, politics or geography, and this relates to what I've learned about that, and, you know, we're kind of piecing what we're hearing together with our framework of knowledge in a kind of intellectual way. When we're listening to a Dharma talk, it's a more holistic kind of listening. So you could say, perhaps, you know, we listen with our heart. You know, where does that touch me? Does that, am I connecting with, you know, what's being said about this? Is there something that, you know, is really resonating with me about my practice that feels like it's, you know, it's pointing to some truth that, you know, I'm understanding? And it's, you know, it's not that we don't, that we have to take in everything and, you know, and believe everything that, you know, I say as, you know, kind of as if it's from the Buddha's mouth. It's not like that, because you might hear something and say, it doesn't make sense to me, and that's okay. But you know, don't get stuck there. You know, keep listening, and see what is useful that you can you know, take in. It's useful for you, for your practice. So, what I'd like to talk about today is embodied wisdom, and this is very much in line with our practice of mindfulness in the body that I've been talking about, that we've all been practicing. I'd like to start by talking about some ordinary ways that we think about the body and ordinary attitudes that we have about the body. And it's not that these, you know, should disappear or that they're bad or we need to get rid of them. But they're not the mindfulness of the body practice that you know, I'm going to be talking about. So, you know, we often think about our body as a thing. You know, it's like an object. We objectify our bodies in our minds. We have an idea that our body is something. And we have an image of our body, you know, of our own bodies and other people's bodies. You know, we have an image that we hold in our mind, but particularly looking at how we relate to our own bodies. You know, we have an image, and usually we have feelings about that image of the body. We like it, or more likely we don't like it. You know, we think it's too this or too that, or not enough this or not enough that. So this sense of having an image of the body, you know, is part of how we make it a thing. We objectify it. We think of the body as an object of others' desire or aversion, depending on how we feel about our body. So if the body is not conforming to the norms of beauty and grace, you know, and I use these words pertaining to male ideals as well as female ideals, you know, we may think that that the body is something that creates aversion to others, and we may feel aversion to our body. If we think that our bodies are, you know, very desirable, then we may identify with being an object of desire. So that, you know, that in itself can, you know, create a lot of suffering. We also, you know, if our body, as our bodies age, you know, we might go from feeling that, you know, this body is very desirable to this body is no longer desirable. And that's another piece of suffering that people go through. And then if we are if this body is, you know, of a different ethnic origin or racial group, then the majority, that may become part of how we think about our bodies, and it may be how we identify the body. And so there are all kinds of ways that we're projecting our attention outside the body, looking at the body as an object, you know, projecting it through other people's eyes. So we can also, the body can be a projection of our personality. We can dress up the body in certain ways, you know. So you think, I want to project this kind of image, you know. I'm gonna, you know, whatever, get tattoos or dress to the nines, you know, spend all my money on classy clothes. So again, it's not condemning any of this. It's the identification with it. You know, it's the identification that this is who I am. My body is myself that creates suffering, and always, you know, seeing the body. These are all seeing the body somehow as an object, and identifying with how others are seeing us. Another way is people get caught in addictions, food addictions, sex addictions, substance addictions, and these are, this is another way of that of relating to the body, which is not not in line with this whole practice of mindfulness of the body. So it becomes, the body becomes a kind of escape from being present with, you know, the parts of our lives which are difficult, whatever it is that's challenging or painful or unhappy. So addictions, feeding different appetites of the body and so on. One of the things that people mistake for a spiritual attitude to the body is this idea that we, you know, we can perfect our bodies, you know, that we can get, you know, sort of the perfect body, and sometimes yoga teachers fall into that, and yoga practitioners, it's like, yeah, just, my body's gonna be so flexible, and I'm gonna look like that, you know, on that CD or DVD or whatever, that or that magazine. And there was actually a, you know, and I'm going to eat so healthy and I'm just going to, you know, stay young forever. And there's this discourse of the Buddha, in which he meets this yogi named Magadhaniya, and he's talking to Magadhaniya, and Magadhaniya is saying, well, I think that, you know, good health and well-being, this is liberation. This is, you know, nibbana. The Buddha talks about complete freedom and non-reactivity. And so, you know, even back at the time of the Buddha, there were people who thought, yeah, if I just get my body perfect and perfectly healthy, and then, you know, that I'll be perfectly happy. And the Buddha said, no, that's not true. The Buddha said that that nibbana or liberation is not subject to aging, illness, and death. Whereas, no matter how well trained the body is, it is subject to aging, illness, and death. So these are just some of the ordinary, you know, very common attitudes that we have to our bodies, you know, and you know, maybe you connected with some of them, maybe not others. But in our practice, our body is really an ally, becomes an ally to our practice. And the Buddha said about mindfulness of the body, now, there's one thing that, when cultivated and regularly practiced, leads to deep spiritual intention. So we talked about intention, how important it is, to peace, to mindfulness and clear comprehension, to vision and knowledge, to a happy life here and now, and to the culmination of wisdom and awakening. And what is that one thing? It's mindfulness centered on the body. So all of those ways of conventionally looking at the body and regarding the body and thinking about the body and our attitudes toward the body, see the body from the outside as an object. And so in our practice, we're learning to inhabit the body from the inside. And in that way, it becomes a place of rest, a place for us to discover the awareness that's present in the body, and a home. There's a wonderful teacher named Gil Fronsdale, who is he's a teacher in California, and he's both a scholar and a translator of texts, and a highly accomplished meditator and teacher. And he began his practice Well, actually, he's practiced Zen as well as Vipassana, so I don't know if this was the beginning of his practice, but he's done Vipassana practice in Thailand with Buddhadasa, one of the great teachers of this tradition. So he says, I did not begin my Buddhist practice with any intention to discover my body. I had no idea that the body had any importance to the path of practice, except as something to place on the meditation cushion. Even during my early months and years of meditation, when my body painfully revealed patterns of tension and psychological holding, I was convinced that these physical difficulties were nuisances to be ignored or transcended, rather than the actual substance and unfolding of practice. Slowly, over the years, as my body began to come alive, I was, and still am, repeatedly surprised by how much awareness, love, and compassion are found in and through the body. I have learned that mindfulness of the body is the foundation of mindfulness practice and one of the best friends we have for integrating that practice into daily life. And so, and I just resonate with that so much. When I began my practice, I really didn't think that, I thought it was all about the mind. And I didn't really think that the body was, any more than something that's kind of carry around my head. And when, as I began, doing retreats and sitting longer, I began to practice mindfulness in the body and realize that, when there was craving that came up, grasping, anger, jealousy, judgment, these were all being expressed in the body, and these habits of mind are being held in the body. And it's really so helpful to be able to see it. It's not easy to see it. It's not easy to see it. But it is so helpful because, the mind, moves very quickly. And so we may have a thought and then, and then we turn our attention somewhere else and that thought is gone. But when those are patterns, when those are habits, in the body, and we learn to turn our attention to the body, we can encounter it. We can come into a direct experience, an intimate experience of what that is. And we discover that it's not very pleasant. And this is where the Buddha started his teaching. Page 1, chapter 1, there is suffering. And then when we feel in the body what judgment is, what anger is, what grasping is, what jealousy is, we say, right on, Buddha, that's suffering. We know it. We know it for ourselves. We don't know it through the mind. It's not just an idea. We know it. We know it in the body. There was one early on in practice, in Vipassana practice. I had this experience. I've talked about it in different contexts, so forgive me if you've heard it before. That, all of a sudden, I realized how much judging was coming up in the mind. And I felt it as a whole body experience, that it was very painful to be judging all the time. I mean, I was astonished at how much the mind was judging. You know, I was judging how people did their walking meditation. I was judging how people ate their food. I was judging what they were wearing. Of course, you know, I was really judging myself even more than that, but I didn't see that until a little later. But it was so painful, and to see it and to feel it and to know that. You know, I just spent the afternoon sitting by the pond and crying, because it was such a shock to see that and to feel it and to realize how painful it was to always be judging. And seeing how painful it was helps us to disconnect, you know, motivates us. When, you know, somebody asked about renunciation and rejection when we see, wow, that's really suffering, you know, it helps the mind to let go. So we think, okay, you know, that's actually painful. I thought it was helping me. I thought it was making me feel better. I thought it was making me feel superior to everybody. But actually underneath, it was a lot of pain. And so seeing that helped the mind to let go. Now I never judge. another thing that Gil Fronsdale said, which I really found quite interesting in the same talk, is when he did one of his early retreats with Ajahn Buddhadasa, Ajahn said to him, don't do anything that takes you out of your body. And Gil wasn't sure what he meant, but he took it as an instruction, and he began to observe. You know, so when is his attention moving out of his body? And he realized it was all the time. You know, he was thinking of what, you know, he wanted to do. He was thinking of what he wanted to eat, of where he wanted to go, of what he wanted to be. And so that was a great instruction, because, you know, all of that kind of reaching out to, you know, become something, do something, experience something, was taking him away from being present in the body. And so he, you know, he just, you know, deepened that practice of of settling into the body. And when we really deepen that practice and abide in the body, you know, the Buddha used the expression, the term, or at least it's been translated, to be mindful of the body in the body. So mindful of the body in the body. So our locus of attention is in the body. And when we train ourselves in that way, to be in the body, then we see those arisings. We see what's pulling us away from being present in the body. And so, you know, we learn to, the body tells us by just through our senses, through the quality of energy that's present in the body, you know, when is grasping arising? When is anger arising? So that we can notice, you know, when is this arising of kind of this fiery energy of anger coming up in us before we, you know, put it out there, say something, you know, that's really hurtful, or do something that's really hurtful, and then, you know, we're in damage control and needing to say, you know, I'm sorry, I overreacted, or maybe there really is something that's a problem in a relationship that we need to talk about. But usually the best way of talking about it is coming from a place of affirming the relationship and addressing, you know, what's problematic there, rather than kind of just lashing out. So our bodies can, the more we're tuned in, the more we can recognize what's moving in the body. And it's really with an attitude of acceptance and openness and listening. You know, so we're really listening to the body. So, you know, a tightening of the stomach, tightening of the jaw, in the throat, or a tingling in the hands. Sometimes, you know, when I feel afraid, I feel it in my arms and my hands sometimes. It's all the body speaking to us. And so it becomes a place, a context within which we can be attuned to what's moving through us. What's manifesting? What are we feeling? What are our responses? And, you know, it's not that words and ideas are unimportant, but when we're grounded in the body, the appropriate response is easier to find. And as we are tuned into the body, we discover that, you know, the body is not a thing. Now that's the kind of ordinary concept, the ordinary attitude that people have towards the body. It's a thing. It's an object. The body is really a living process. The body is not something static. The body is—it's alive. It's a flow of energy, and it's an expression of life. When we're grounded in the body, you know, one of the reasons. One of the things that people encounter as we enter into this practice is that, you know, we often feel we need to know the answer to everything. We need to know the answer if we have something comes up in our life. So what are we going to do about it? You know, people say, so what are you going to do about that? You know, there's a problem, you know, so what should I do? I should know, you know. And so we come up with an idea. Okay, I guess I'll do this, or I guess I'll work on that. And the body, because it's a place, it's silent. It doesn't speak in words. It expresses itself in a nonverbal way. You know, when we're in the body, we're in a place of not knowing. And And not knowing in Buddhist teaching is actually surprisingly often a place of wisdom. It's a place of openness. It's a space of curiosity, of interest, of potential. If I don't know, then I'm exploring. I'm looking deeply. So being in this space of not knowing is actually, if we're a know-it-all, maybe some of you have heard the Zen story of the man who came to visit the Zen monk, and he knew a lot. He was a scholar, and he knew a lot about Zen practice and Zen history, and he wanted to speak to this monk and get some teaching, and they sat down to some tea, and the Zen monk poured into the visitor's cup, and then, after the cup was full, he kept pouring, and the visitor said, "Hey, it's spilling all over the place. You can't put any more in there. It's full. It's already full." And the monk said, "Yeah, your mind is so full. You know it all." Probably didn't say it quite like that, but you never know with Zen monks. Your mind is so full of all this knowledge that there's no space for you to, receive anything new, to be open to other possibilities. So being present, not knowing, being open, curious. So, to go back to one of the phrases from that piece by Gil Fronsdale that I read. When the body painfully revealed patterns of tension and psychological holding, I was convinced that these physical difficulties were nuisances to be ignored or transcended rather than the actual substance and unfolding of practice. So one of the things I've discovered is that, in my own body, my own body is not mine. I mean, the body is alive, and it's made of water and energy and earth, and so on. So that's why I keep saying the body rather than my body or your body. So the body is something that's continually changing. And so it's not something static. It's every cell is replenished every 7 years or something like that. So there's not one cell in your body that was there when you were a child, and yet we still think of it as, this is me. It's a process, and as as I began to attune to the body and notice, when craving was arising, when anger was arising, and how it lived in the body, and the patterns of reactivity, and how they manifested in the body, and as somebody said earlier today, it's not easy. It's painful. Can be very unpleasant and feel very intense. So, but just, you know, having the patience and the compassion to give it space to be received, you know, allows the body to begin to release some of those habits, you know, in which we're contracting around pain, contracting around patterns that, you know, have accumulated over a lifetime. And we discover that, you know, the holding actually takes a lot of energy. You know, all of that holding that we're doing, all the tightening and tensing that we're doing in the body, it actually takes a lot of energy. And that when we begin to relax around some of these places of tightness in the body, that we have more energy in our lives. More energy to be present, more energy to live in ways and give and create and explore the world in ways that we like to. Hopefully not just to do more driven behavior. That's, you know, that's patterned behavior. Yeah. If we feel like we're on a wheel, you know, rat race wheel, then there's a drivenness that we have to be something. We have to become something that conforms to some idea. So energy is freed as we release some of those patterns of holding, those habits of holding. And, you know, another thing I discovered is that, you know, when we're holding, when we're contracting in the body, a lot of pain in the body can come from contracting in the body. And as we bring mindfulness to those places of contraction, and, you know, we may experience grief, or, you know, that we've been holding and trying to block off or push away, or fear, that when we can receive that hurt or that pain in the space of compassion and awareness, it can move through us. It can release over time. It wants to be received. It wants to be released. It wants to be known. And it's the pushing it down and contracting around it that that holds it, actually. So, we're not directing our attention to the body, you know, in kind of as opposed to the mind. We're actually discovering the awareness that's in the body. Again, to read from Gil Fonsdale. In the end, the centrality of the position of the body in Buddhist practice does not mean that we need to willfully direct our attention toward the body as if awareness and the body were two separate things. Mindfulness of the body is instead an invitation for us to open to the awareness which is already present in the body. Practice is not directing or creating something, The beginning and end of practice is the awakening of what is already there. So this is what I would like to encourage you to explore and discover. It may not make complete sense to you now. If you're new to the practice of mindfulness in the body, but just learning to be present in the body, you know, as you stand, as you walk, as you eat, as you do your yoga practice, as you take a shower, as you brush your teeth, as you go to the washroom, just really staying connected to the body. You know, just try it. I really encourage you, invite you to make that a continual practice throughout this this time that we have together. To perhaps you might find a place where you're kind of bringing your awareness. Maybe it's in the heart. Just as you're walking, as you're, you know, just feeling your heart. Or maybe in Zen practice, the place where people bring their attention, seat their attention is the just below the navel. It's called the hara, and it's just in the abdomen here. And just feel that as a kind of a groundedness, a place where you can abide in the body. And notice when you're getting pulled out of the body. You know, as Ajahn Buddhadasa said to Gil, you know, don't do anything that takes you out of the body. It's not something we're used to. So it may feel different, but it's not hard. You know, it's not complicated. it's simple. So it's a simple practice, just coming back to the body, feeling the flow of sensation. And then noticing, you know, where's the mind? Is it off somewhere? Come back. Come back to the body. And the body does become our greatest friend, our greatest ally in our practice of becoming free, becoming non-reactive, happy, loving, and compassionate being. So let's take a couple of minutes just to sit. So you don't have to change your posture. Find a stability of posture and feel the body breathing. short poem by David White called Enough. Enough. These few words are enough. If not these words, this breath. If not this breath, this sitting here. This opening to the life we have refused again and again. Until now. Until now. Some walking meditation.